I am the guardian.
Do you love liberty? The CD, I Will Live Free, celebrates, describes, and explains our precious national treasure, the Bill of Rights, in words and music. On it are 9 songs that convey the spirit of freedom based on the wisdom of our founding fathers. Order the CD, I Will Live Free, at 520-327-8044. That's 327-8044.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
And welcome to America Armed and Free, where we have the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having with us Richard Marchenko. He's went out as a commander. He's retired from the Navy as a full commander after more than 30 years of service. He currently lives in Northern Virginia, where he's CEO of SOS Temps, his private security firm whose clients are governments and corporations. Richard Marchenko, Inc., a motivational training and team-building company, and Red Cell International, which conducts vulnerability assessments of high-value properties and high-risk targets. Welcome to the telephones and microphones of America Armed and Free, Richard Marchenko.
Thanks. Good to be there. It's good to be retired, right, after all, huh?
Makes you tired just listening to your bio, doesn't it?
Well, you know, they tell me if I didn't do all those things, I'd probably get in trouble, but we know they're probably right.
Oh, you get in trouble? Nah, hardly. Richard, in Vengeance, you've once again managed to make some harrowing situations into humorous quick reads. Do we really have so-called homeland security?
Well, we're just going through our second reorganization. I would say bluntly, yes, we have an organizational structure. Yes, we have a machine that makes policy. No, we do not have a working team. And at the working level where you and I live, ain't nothing, Coach. How's that for the voice of doom?
Yeah, doom on them, right? Is Homeland Security a viable department within its huge bureaucracy? In other words, is there like a nucleus? Well, can I say that word to you? I mean,
yeah. I won't blow up, or I won't glow in the dark either.
Yeah, nuke them till they glow and shoot them in the dark. Yeah. That ought to be your bumper sticker. I had one like that, and it sure got a lot of middle fingers raised at me, but it was kind of cool. Now I got one that says, give war a chance. It gets me some bad honks, too.
Well, you know, war is just another military acronym. Stands for We Are Ready.
I love it. Boy, that peace activist I had on the hour before you would be glowing when he heard that. But is there like a nugget within, nugget you don't want to say either. Is there a nucleus within Homeland Security of good people that will do the right thing to protect the country or no?
Well, the answer to the question, yeah, there are a lot of good people. The problem is that organizationally, even though I sit back here and throw stones, but to gobble up all those organizations, throw them in one bag called 180,000 people, and get them to march to one tempo. You know, when they've been in flux for 2 years, and now they're going through another reorganization. But we've thrown a lot of money at it. We've built a lot of command centers. We've written a lot of policy. But when you talk about what is functionally happening, take aviation industry for an example. There was a concern about the surface-to-air missiles.
Yeah, like the Grail 7 and the Grail, the shoulder-fired missiles.
And, you know, a lot of them are still out there because, you know, we issued them when the Taliban were fighting for us against the Russians. I mean, we're fighting for it, but we equipped them. The last check I had, there's probably in the neighborhood of 3,000 shoulder-fired missile systems out there that aren't accounted for, you know, between all the dogs and cats that have them. You know, getting back to homeland, they write a policy statement and task industry, the aviation industry, to come up with a fix for every civilian airline. Well, we're not Israel, where we only have 49 or 60 airframes. We have over 20,000 flights a day, so that's a lot of systems to check.
That's a whole lot of chaff boxes to service.
Well, it sure is, and it goes beyond the chaff boxes. And all those CEOs that run those aviation companies report to stockholders, and fuel costs are up, and flying is down, and And the bottom line is, you're telling the wrong guys to fix this thing.
Okay, on September 11, 2001, only three of the four attacks we know about, at least in the public, were successful. Of the one that was not, it was a case of the people, you can read that in parentheses, the militia, responding to a crisis rather than the government. Can we use more of that model for Homeland Security? And if so, in your opinion, to what effect?
Well, I think we have to. One of the purposes that I have of writing that whole Rogue Warrior series is to make it a fun read, but kind of an awareness of what's going on. And where I think we're remiss in this whole dialogue of where we're going is we keep on talking about counterterrorism. Well, I don't want to counter terrorism. I don't want it to happen.
You want to kill terrorism.
Yes, and getting ahead of the power curve a little bit. But, you know, our national policy is to fight it over there, so the collateral damage is over there, and I'm all for that. I mean, I think that makes logical sense. But when you look at what we're doing with our money and how we're doing it, what really has to happen with the American people is take the neighborhood watch, cinch up our belt, and everybody has to be on alert.
Are you familiar with the Minuteman Project here in Arizona?
Yes.
Is that the type of concept you're talking about?
Well, I go beyond that. I mean, that I think is certainly it has some problems, and that personalities lead them, and you know, you have a problem with control. But things to me that would make sense, and I've approached major academic institutions with the thought. If you go back to the second book I wrote, Red Cell, and what I do with Red Cell International, the company I have now, is it boils down to that grant money from Homeland Security is going to universities for a lot of projects. And we're talking about megabucks. We're not talking about $1.280. We're talking about, you know, a million here and 600,000 there. And you know, they're healthy dollars. And there's no donut machine here in D.C. that's cranking them out. They're coming out of all our listeners and in my pockets and your pockets. But, you know, if we went to these institutions and what I propose is, you know, give me or somebody like me a two-hour block of instruction in every functional academic area. I'm not asking for a curriculum. I'm not asking you to buy my books. I'm not asking, but let me listen to what you say you do within that curriculum, and then let me take you across the street and let me show you how, as a terrorist, I'm going to break it. Then you go back in and write your thesis, say, now I can make a better mousetrap.
Now, you're talking about doing this with engineering schools, right? So that people...
Well, I mean, you can do it in a lot of other schools. I mean, if I went into the media and the liberal arts side of the house, I certainly can go into liberal art, you know, into the writings, into communications, into...
Well, what would you change in communications in terms... In other words, how would a person, say, in journalism be affected by terrorism as opposed to an engineer be affected insofar as you'd be teaching the engineer how the terrorist would look at something so he might build the girders, the support girders in a place it was harder to bomb.
By studying what they're already doing, what they're doing with the Arab press, by using misinformation, by using the visual display of digital displays with hidden messages in it, and there's a whole series of things that are available that these young kids, you know, grow up with a mouse on their hand, they know how to do those kind of things. So it really is an awareness and focusing on, well, okay, this is how I become CEO, this is how I become a millionaire. Now, how do I protect my country and my $1 million I just made at the same token?
While your experience in counterterrorism is legendary, and indeed today you're still involved with that type of work with, like you said, Red Cell Incorporated and SOS Temps, you're not the only retired SEAL counterterrorism expert. There's a great wealth of talent and resources. I believe you might refer to it as the Frog Network, I think. Are we not ignoring a potential vital resource and not using them both strategically in counterterrorism planning, like you were just talking about, and also tactically in areas of high risk, such as port terminals and letting retired SEALs qualify up to the U.S. Marshall standard and then carry on an airliner and back up the people who are there or even lead in the case where there's no one else in law enforcement there?
We've missed the bubble on that, Charles. I mean, when TSA started out and decided that they had to have their Marshall cadre, you know, and they could only be 35 and they had to wear blazers, you know, well, they stick out like you know what because they're in a uniform.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody, you know, maybe when I was a youngster, everybody got dressed up when they traveled. But now everybody's in, you know, they're in their jogging gear and their shorts, and I mean, they travel in comfort. So to have somebody that looks like, you know, they're in a uniform or they are officialdom sticks out. Where we missed is it, well, one, just here at National Airport, Reagan National Airport in D.C., the heart of government, only about 20% of our flights are covered by marshals.
Mm-hmm.
One, we've been hit. Two, there's a lot of prime targets here, so I suspect we're pretty susceptible. But when we went to going to, you know, build the marshals, I said, okay, that's what you want to do. But like you alluded to, there's a whole cadre. I mean, there's ex-cops, there's ex-military, that for 5 days I could have certified on a weapons to know what's going on, and they could be under contract for a year or so many flights per year that are already retired. You don't have to give them a benefit package. You don't, you know.
Or even one further than that. You give them 5 free flights a year, and you get enough of them going enough places that at any one time you can pretty well be guaranteed that, you know, they give them a free ticket for them and a free ticket for their spouse and promise to fly 5 times a year and don't pay them a thing.
Yeah, I've had so many retired people say, hey, you know, give me 10 flights a year and let my wife go with me. And they certainly would blend in.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you were running the war on terror, briefly, because we're only 3:12 from the next break, if you were running the war on terror, what would change?
Well, I would do those kind of things. I mean, I would start using the pool of retired, the pool of things that we have available, and start circulating, getting people off their cheeks and doing things. You know, right after 9/11, I was on the circuit doing motivational and team building and all these speeches and book signings, and I'm on the road. And I get down to the state level, and states are waiting for the feds to either send them money or tell them the policy of what they're supposed to do. Meantime, the threat is there today. If you go a step further from that, then money starts to go down the state level out of Homeland, and, of course, the economy took a little hiccup, and so states are holding on to their money, saying, well, I have it here, but I better wait and see if and when I can spend it. I mean, we have some 2002 money we haven't spent yet out of Homeland Security. And then get down to the, you know, the general population of what they can do. And when you get into the different programs like the Minutemen program and the Extended Neighborhood Watch and just an awareness program to go on. And then if the Muslim radicals can train youngsters in the Quran and hating us and stepping off the, you know, the magic carpet to come and get us, then we ought to at least have something in our school system that tells us the awareness of what to watch out for. I mean, just surviving. It's not going over there and getting them. It's how do you survive?
Maybe we just need to squirt their magic carpets with Scotch Guard so they slide off of them.
Well, I've said it many times. I wouldn't want to bring bin Laden to trial and make him another martyr and a hero, and certainly don't want him in prison so where he could recruit. I would belittle myself and take off his head and pour pig's blood on him, wrap him in pigskin, and let him know, I know, if that's his belief system, believe me, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there's going to be a following guy to him, but you know, they'll think 3 or 4 times before I say, I'm not going to see Allah with this guy. He's kind of a wild one.
The blackjack Pershing solution. You know, I had Charlie Daniels on this program about 1.5 years ago, and he said, if you want to get bin Laden, I'll tell you how. You come down to Tennessee and get some of my good old boys, and you explain to them in graphic terms how it was truly Osama bin Laden's fault that Dale Earnhardt died, and then you give them a letter of mark and reprisal and let them go over to Afghanistan, and 1 week later you'll have Osama.
Oh, certainly with the websites and email, there's been a lot of those going on. But a lot of them that, you know, like read, like ingest, actually have a lot of fact to them.
Sure, you bet. The idea of private people, although it makes the government types go nuts. And then again, you're one of those private people, but then again, you are the beneficiary of government training before you went to become one of the private people. Richard, we're running right up to the first break, so I'm going to ask folks, this would be a great time.
You're listening to America Armed and Free on AM 690 KVOI.
Grenada and Afghanistan and Panama's just cause. Halo jumps and scuba swims were missions for the frogs. Somalia, East Africa, Iraq and Pakistan. Shooting, looting, sneaking, peeking, combat hand to hand. Hoo-yah, we're Navy SEALs. Hoo-yah, fire in the hole. Hoo-yah, we'll never quit. Hoo-yah, we're good to go.
And we are good to go on America Armed and Free, where we have the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having with us Dick Marcinko, Richard Marcinko, former Navy commander and former head of SEAL Team 6. In fact, you were the first head of SEAL Team 6, right?
Yes, I was.
How you like the music? A little different than you hear on most talk shows.
Dedicated, it makes me feel good, you know.
Cool.
And actually, you know, this is a kind of a sad weekend.
Yes.
On the SEALs that you raised that one. This is a reunion weekend, the third weekend in July at Little Creek, Virginia, Virginia Beach area, where we all gather. And, of course, we just had all of those deaths in Afghanistan. So there's kind of a sober moment and a realization what's going on.
Yes, there is indeed. By the way, that was a special sent for this interview from Tommy Cox, a fellow up in Maine, and who's an admirer of yours, and he wanted to make sure that you heard that and that he knew and that you knew that. We're going to go to the phones on America Armed and Free with Richard Marcinko. Chris, you're live on America Armed and Free with Richard Marcinko and Charles Heller. Your question for Mr. Marcinko.
Mr. Marcinko, excuse me. This is a real pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Well, thank you.
I know a friend of yours. you mentioned him in one of your books, Dan Cusseter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I met him when he was running for sheriff in one of the most corrupt counties in California 4 years ago, and he talked very highly of you. And so this is very much an honor for me to say hello to you.
Do you have a quick question for him?
No, I just wanted to relay that comment.
Well, thanks, I'm sure he's doing good out there.
Did he win?
I'm heading back in 2 weeks, so maybe I'll see him.
I said hi if I catch up with him. I haven't seen him in about 4 years.
Okay.
Did he win?
No.
The corrupt ones won.
I'm from Chicago. You don't have to explain that to me. Have a great day, Chris. Opens up a line for you at 790-2040. Richard, I want to ask you two questions of sort of a personal nature. I've read your autobiography, Rogue Warrior, and I think eight of your other 14 fiction books. Sorry, I haven't gotten all 14 yet. But you have a unique ability among all the people I know of to irritate some people. Now, I realize that you usually only irritate the incompetent jerks, but why operate that way in a way that makes enemies who are in a position to later perform a rearguard action against you?
Well, you know, if you're surrounded with your enemies, any way you move, you're attacking, and you know where they're at.
I see. So get yourself surrounded by enemies,
well,
and that way you know where you stand?
Somebody once said that, Charles, that if I use your right name, I don't like you.
Okay, well, just call me Heller anyway. You managed to get away with a lot of things that most of us, if they tried them, would be probably called felonies. Is it just the bravado, or do you know a lot of people in places that get you out of jams, or is it just you don't care that much if you get in trouble as long as you reach your objectives?
Oh, well, actually, most people don't take time to figure it out, but I do a lot of homework. So I always have either the book of excuses or the waiver locker standing by that explains why, and or I've done the homework so that if you want to dump me, I'm going to dump you harder.
Uh-huh. I love the Unideer memo. I've used that in my own life many times based on your book. You might just take 10 seconds and explain what that is.
Well, that's a very good, I think very functional Navy term. It's the Navy does a lot of independent steaming, ships at sea, but, you know, by themselves, not in formation. So consequently, they designed a UNODIR, which is an acronym for unless otherwise directed. So you just tell your boss, hey, you advise them, if you don't say something else, here's what I'm going to do. And so you plan well on it ahead and send it out and then turn off your radio.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And your pager and everything else, even if they have a pager made to not be turned off. Rudy, you're live on America Armed and Free with Richard Marchenko, former skipper of SEAL Team 6. Your question for Mr. Marchenko.
Oh, well, first I want to thank Mr. Marchenko for his service to our country.
Ditto.
Well, I had a good time.
You know, there used to be a civil defense program in the United States, and I was wondering, is there one now, and if not, why?
I don't know why, but no, there isn't. In fact, what really infuriates me, when we went through the Y2K thing and every alert that comes up, and I can remember growing up, there was a sign on the building, you know, it was down in the basement, and there were stockpiles of water and stuff, and that was the old bomb shelter for civil defense, and all of that has gone away. And I think that probably now that's where everybody goes to hide in federal buildings to smoke cigarettes they're not supposed to smoke in.
It is
one of those things that disappeared over the horizon, and I haven't seen anything come back to even make it look good. I mean, look at the FEMA and look at all the problems that you have down in Florida with all the hurricanes coming in. I mean, you know, we are marshaling all the people in schools. I mean, we don't have real shelter systems anymore.
Right. It's something we should lobby for or just do on our own, do you think?
Well, you know, going with getting back to homeland under the new regime and the second reorganization structure, it basically said, the new rules are he was going to focus on those things that would cause the most magnitude of damage and the states would take care of the rest. So that almost told me that our 361 ports that we have that are very vulnerable that a SEAL would know about, local populations and local, you know, tax have to take care of it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and have a good day.
Richard, you have a pretty interesting scene in Vengeance, which is your latest book. By the way, where do you want people to get the book?
They can get it anywhere. I get royalties no matter what happens.
Okay, good. Well, that's assured.
You know, if it's convenient, I will say that the publishing world is gone like everything else in reorganization of structure. And so if you have a good independent store, bookstore that caters to you and knows to you, go there because they're struggling hard against the big chains and against the the Amazon.com and all those things. Right?
God bless freedom. In Vengeance, you have this scene about an exercise where you do a night parachute drop into a truck depot at a National Guard base and rig the trailers with fake explosives. As part of that scene, you comment on the vulnerability of our nation's truck fleet. Could you briefly tell us how bad is that, and would armed truckers who are no-nonsense shooters make much of a difference?
Well, yeah, I mean, answer that question. When we're very vulnerable, for those that I guess live here on the East Coast, you see the trucks on the road, but you don't see the magnitude of them at all the big warehouses in Indiana and Ohio and out west, where the truck farms. You take a good gander at them, and you're looking at 600, 800, 18 wheelers standing by, just in some stage of get ready for transportation, and they're rolling all the time. And, it's easy to either hijack them, it's either modify them, and, the truckers, I mean, they have to stay alert, one, just to stay alive, and they know what's going on, and they listen to talk shows while they're rolling.
Boy, do they ever.
I mean, God bless them. They are a set of eyes. That's another thing another thing that I should have talked about when you raised the other issue of what we can do is that, put them in on a flush network. We do have state control centers that have comms up. That when they're rolling, they can report things get scoffed in a hurry, and because they're up there reporting and they're jabbering night and day. I mean,
I'll do you one better. Have a computer system that when they give a control location, it activates cameras and sends the pictures of what they're seeing in real time right to Homeland Security. Wouldn't take that very much more work or network than we already have.
Yeah, we have the network. We just don't have the hardware, and
it's not wired together. It seems to me.
Yeah, well, I would venture that there's a general counsel somewhere that says that Civil Liberties Union come down here, and I'll be in court because that's another set of eyes spying on me. And of course, my view is, if you're not doing anything wrong, what do you care what's going on?
Well, I could argue with you about that one, but I'm not going to in terms of this interview, because I want to ping your expertise, not tell you my opinions. I will tell you, I think you've missed the point in one type of truck. It's not been in any of your books, and that is a bull rack. Those trucks hauling cattle,
yeah,
no one would ever spot any kind of device, and no one is willing to go through the literal BS at the bottom of the truck to look for it. And it would be, those trucks don't have to be broken into. They have open slats on the sides. You could put some kind of a chemical weapon in there that would disperse as the thing went, and it wouldn't even take breaking into the truck to do it.
Yeah, they're already using those things in Iraq. They're bringing stuff in carcasses to penetrate.
Yeah, so, in animal carcasses.
Yeah, unfortunately, Charles, it's just so easy being a bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't cost a lot. You just have to be aware, where America doesn't fully understand the threat concept is when you look at suicide bombers. We go to war to preserve life, and none of us that go to war want to get killed. We want to kill the other guy. And now you're looking at an enemy that, one, doesn't like us, two, comes at us to die. I mean, that's like half the equation is gone. There certainly is no...
Now, how do you threaten somebody whose intent is to die?
Yeah, I mean...
As they come towards you, you have to hold up, like you said, the pigskin.
I mean, it's called, make my day. You kill them, you just made their day.
That's right.
And we just can't fathom that as a nation.
Respectfully, I hate to do this. I respectfully disagree with you. We can fathom it just fine. We know the phrase divine wind, right?
Yeah.
Well, these are the divine break winds. we're up, Richard. We're up on the next break.
You're listening to America Armed and Free on AM 690 KVOI, your high-velocity conduit to freedom, with Charles Heller.
Naval Special Warfare Group, Spec Ops CQB. Locking out of submarines, go in by SDV. Terminating terrorists, we're nothing but the best. Standing tall in our dress blues with tridents on our chest. Hoo-yah, we're Navy SEALs. Hoo-yah, fire in the hole. Hoo-yah, we'll never quit. Hoo-yah, we're good to go.
This is is the Rogue Warrior, Dick Marcinko, reaching out to you in America, armed and free, 690 on your AM dial at KVOI, and Charles Heller's got the rest.
Hey, thanks, Richard. Really appreciate it. Again, I wanted to tell you that the music is from Tommy Cox, and he is a guy that does a lot of music about submarines, but he branched out a little bit and did a little bit about the SEALs. If you Google Tommy Cox on the Internet, you'll be able to find that music and also the one I use with Diesel Boats Forever and quite a few other ones. One tribute song to the Scorpion, and it's good music, and you should own it. You should also own Richard Marcinko's latest work, Vengeance, and he's got some other ones. His biography from what, about 14 years ago, 13 years ago?
Oh, 92, if we can remember that far back.
Can we? I don't know. My memory isn't scarred by drugs, so...
They're senior citizen moments, too, to flip in there, Joel.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the word paucity last hours, but Vengeance is a great book. It's a very good read. Richard Marcinko does is he buries the truth in between a lot of interesting fiction, and it's very readable, but it's also very informative. You have some statistics in there about just how vulnerable the trucking industry is in the United States.
I call the trains the shaft after NAFTA, and to me they seem to be logical things, Charles. You don't have to have a high IQ. Just kind of look around you and see what's going on. And if you look at that first hit in Vengeance, the train run, we were talking the other day, I wrote a piece, is it fiction or prediction? We profiled the Homeland Security and the law enforcement arm have profiled Middle Eastern men. So the first hit in Vengeance, they're Bosnian. I mean, they look like these brutal boys.
Yep.
But they say, same beliefs, the same hatred. And of course, after I talked to you the other day, I checked. That chloride train that had a derailment in South Carolina was in January, and 8 people died. Is that easy, just a derailment? So here in the United States, what really is amazing is that you can be a bad guy, come to the United States, steal, buy, or borrow anything you really need. It's not like you have to carry the bomba with you across borders, and it's hard to do. It's
very easy to do. I worked for a time on the railroad. Few people realize just how vulnerable trains are to anything from someone jumping on board and commandeering the train to a small arms fire. While I was on the railroad, there was a bizarre incident just west of Casa Grande where two drunk members of the tribe on the reservation there took, I'm not making a slur against Indians, these two guys were drunk. Two members of the tribe there took after the lead engine, called the power in the consist of the railroad train. And first round, it was an AK clone semi-automatic. The first round went through the engineer's window, zipped past his head, and it hit on the back wall of the train. And on the back wall, there's a kill switch, which instantly shuts the train down. It shut down all 5 diesels instantly and threw the train into what's called emergency, which sets 26 pounds of braking action with maximum brake on the train. It stopped in just over a half a mile. The shooters then took turns with the rifle for the rest of the magazine, kind of pinned down the engineer and the conductor in the cab there. You have a scene in Vengeance where you board a moving train and commandeer it as part of an exercise. The engineer manages to get off one round at you from a Colt Detective Special. By the way, I'm wearing one of those today. It's a violation of federal law for the train crew to be armed. Can you think of anything more stupid than that?
Well, just like we fought for a long time to get pilots trained after 9-1-1.
They're still not.
And they're still not, and some pilots fight it, and the unions fight it, and it gets back to the vulnerability thing. And it's ridiculous. I mean, I guess that we're doing all these things half-assed.
Mm-hmm.
We say, I'm going to get you, and then we put our hands in our pockets and say, will you take the first punch, please?
Yeah. Charles, you're live on America Armed and Free with Richard Marcinko and Charles Heller. Your question for Mr. Marcinko.
Yeah, thank you. Richard, my nephew's in Iraq, and I was listening to a show the other day on public broadcasting that really surprised me about the incredible number of private contracting firms. I realize that you're private these days, that are in Iraq. The Army Corps of Engineers is protected by private contracted mercenaries over there by the United States, by Halliburton, as a matter of fact. And so you have a situation where you have American military guys who are making hardly anything, standing there being guarded by guys that are getting paid $1,000 a day, and if they decide that it gets too hot for them or it gets too close, they can just pack up their tent and go home. And what I want to know is, since ultimately we're paying all these people, how come we can't be paying our American military guys over there a hell of a lot more money than we're paying them if we can afford to be paying all these private contracted guys $1,000?
Hoo-yah.
Hey, I'll drink to that.
Little Bombay gin for you, huh?
Yeah.
And a Berghoff beer for
me. Well, actually, the active duty guys are it's all relative. One, they are making a lot more money than when I was in and when I first started, and as you bring up, they certainly deserve it. What I feel is more ludicrous about that whole situation is that I'll narrow it down to those things that I know probably best, and that's called SEALs. Is that one that the enlisted men get jump pay, demo pay, diving pay, and they get combat pay, and they get proficiency pay. I mean, they make a good buck. But what is bad is you get all that training. They go through 6 months of that training. You continue to train. You take them over to war. And then you have conventional commanders that want them to pick up fought on the runway or to have a haircut and have a nice uniform.
If I may translate for a minute, fought is foreign object damage. Go ahead.
Yeah, so not to embarrass anybody. And as you bring up, those contractors are running around in picking up trucks, and they're guys like me that are retired that are making that good money you're talking about, but it really alienates what we're doing is those are the guys that are out there kicking ass and having fun, and the people that ought to be able to go out there and do their job are being held back because of a protocol and being politically correct and all those other things that get me just drinking more than I need to drink.
This call is from a federal prison.
A word from my sponsor there.
Charles, a quick follow-up?
Yeah, well, like I say, it just I was listening, and the guys get attacked, and their contracted guards that are with them, okay, they just, after they get attacked, they just pack up and drive off and leave them because they decided that was too close. The one guy said he'd been there, 10 months. He'd made $100,000. He figured he pressed his luck far enough. He wasn't pressing any farther. And they just go off and leave them right then and there, out and they're unprotected.
Well, Charles, take your answer on that.
The gun and lowered it on those contractors that are reneging on a contract. I think that's gonna change for probably what's not much better is in the transition of besides all of our contractors there that are targets of opportunity, we're building our embassy that's going to be 3,000 strong that's going to be targets of opportunity, and it'll be the Iraqi government that doles out the dollars and as we have seen in some of the oil transgressions so far, there's a lot of kickback on that.
Good a time as any to take the last break.
AM 690 KVOI.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
In 1813, Jack started to work on a plan to reopen the port of New York. The British blockade had everyone down, so Mad Jack decided to turn it around. He borrowed a fisherman's smack, so I'm told, put goats on the deck and armed men in the hold. When a tender of redcoats dared pull him aside, his men came out shooting as proudly he cried. Come a sailor, come a soldier, come a captain, a king. If you dare me to do it, I'll do anything. I'll take up the fight.
And if you dare him to do it, he might just do anything. And there's a recording of a song about a very early SEAL type action. We have the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having with us Richard Marchenko, former commander, first commander of SEAL Team 6. That song was about a guy named Jack who in 1813 did basically a special forces action, goats on the deck and armed men in the hold, and kind of sounds like something that you might have done. And please don't say that thing that has to do with goats.
Hardy, me matey.
The tradition of naval special warfare certainly predates the SEALs and even the frogmen, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, in fact, Veterans Day weekend in November is when they have they call it the muster at Fort Pierce, Florida, which is A1A just below. Let's see, Fort Pierce is just below Vero Beach. But at any rate, that's where the museum is at, and that's where they started off with scouts and raiders. So you go from scouts and raiders to underwater demolition team, which were the naked warriors with demolition packs. Then you get diving gear. Then you go to SEALs, and then you go to counterterrorism. So, you know, it's just an incremental, where do you want to fight them at? Let's go.
Richard, I'm a scuba diver, in fact, a wreck diver. Spent 3.5 years on my county search and recovery dive unit here as a volunteer. And done some interesting wrecks here and there. Have you ever locked out of a submarine?
Yes.
What is the experience of going from the inside of a submarine to the into the environment of the ocean? What is that? I hate to sound liberal because I ain't, but what does that feel like?
Well, you know, it's like you are now in the big aquarium. You're moving around in a cigar-shaped sewer pipe called a submarine. They lock you out of an escape hatch where you're cramped, and then you have this vast ocean. One, you can go to surface, or you can go to work with a swimmer delivery vehicle. But you look at the plankton, and you look what's around you, and of course, if you're a seal going to work ashore, you're near shoreline, so you're going to see some bottom for a period of time, at any rate. But it's the first thing you try to figure out is make sure you get past those screws.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because the submarine does not sit still. He's got way on.
Yeah, he's got to because he's got to have steerage.
Yeah, so it's much like a firefight. You know, you're not concentrating on killing somebody. You're just very busy trying to survive. So when you lock out, you know, you get there, you get your equipment, you get your swim buddy, and you're just busy.
Mm.
And so
you don't have time to think about how it feels.
No, you know, it's just like a free fall. You pull your ripcord, and you don't count the pins. You figure what you got to do next.
Yeah, I guess so.
You don't count pins until you don't feel that good hurt when it opened.
Yep. Speaking of what it feels like, I must ask you. I said I was going to ask two personal questions. Does it change your life after? Tough question for me to ask you, but does it change your life after you kill somebody? I mean, does it what dent does it make in you?
I don't know. I'm really not sure how. I think everybody has to answer that one. Everybody has their own threshold. It's never bothered me because I was blessed in that when I had to kill somebody, it was my mission. You know, it's not like where you dislike somebody and you plan to do something about them and you throttle them because of that. You know, I was just doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes a big monkey off your back, I think.
Hmm. You recently addressed a joint Russian-American police forum in St. Petersburg. And folks, if you just tuned in, you're listening to America Armed and Free. We had the joy, the pleasure, and the honor of having with us Commander Richard Marchenko, who was the first commander of SEAL Team 6 and also is the author of the Rogue Warrior series of books. His latest in the series is Vengeance, with co-author Jim DeFelice, who is also a very well-known and well-respected military author. And the book is available. He prefers you to get it at the independent bookstores. Richard, you recently addressed the joint Russian-American police forum in St. Petersburg, Russia. By the way, your publicity photo and the suit for that conference looks like your head is about to be pinched off by the tie. Maybe that's maybe you bought it at the Duma New tie shop or something.
I did that. Well, yeah. But the Russians said I look more Russian than they did. They can't look that way anymore.
Oh, but I digress. What have we to learn about security against terrorism from the Russians, and what have we to teach them?
Well, what we do in that whole program, and it's a Department of Justice program, is exchanging technology. They have some titanium, for an example. It's a little cheaper over there, and we can use it certainly in some of our hardware. They don't have all the electronics we do, and of course they haven't been exposed to all the bad guys that we do, because we fight it more around the world. So it is really a blend. I wish it was kind of awesome, and I think I asked myself 14 times a day who to thunk as I drove some of their vehicles and fired their weapons and went to Spetsnaz base and you know, I said, you know, 10 years ago I was supposed to come through the backside of this thing and blow it up and hear the salute me go through the front door.
And not only that, you also honored them, didn't you?
Yes, I later reset this, but yeah, I mean, warriors are warriors, and so that was a it was just a unique trip. In fact, the going away, yeah, you'd appreciate this. The going away dinner was at St. Petersburg aboard their Aurora, a Navy vessel. They opened up for us, and we had dinner in the wardroom. That was the ship that they fired the first gun that started the war.
Which war?
The 1912, I think it was.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. The Russo-Japanese War? No, that ended earlier than that.
Yeah, it was. And, of course, it was January, so it didn't get daylight until 10 in the morning, and it was dark at 5 in the evening. So.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good time for special operations. Back to the phones. Pete, you're live on America Armed and Free with Commander Richard Marchenko and Charles Heller. Your question for him.
Mr. Marchenko, it's a real honor to be able to ask you a question. I've got two real quick questions, and I'll take the answers off the air.
Okay.
Back during Red Cell, did you ever go to Tucson? And if so, what was the result? And then my second question is, what's your opinion on the debate between the AK-47 and the M16?
Well, the first one, I went to Tucson, and places around Tucson, went down to Machuca, went down to the border. It's like most of our cities in a free society. I think going to Davis-Monthan and taking picket litter out of there would have been fun. Everybody could build their own plane out of the dump out there. On the AK-47,
we'll call that AMARC, sir. Go ahead.
On the AK-47 versus the M-16, one, if you can, you know, if you're working independently behind the lines, it's nice to have the lighter load. But most, you know, you don't have that 5.56 around the world, so carrying the AK-47 logistically is, you get something there. And frankly, I'm a big boy, and I can carry that extra weight, and I like that. as it goes by you versus that, and you know, the 223.556 does a nice tumble and tears you up on the inside, but I like that knockdown power of the 7.62 that comes out of that 8K, and it's great in the field. I mean, you can get it muddy. It's got great tolerances. So functionally, I guess I would go that internationally the AK-47 has more functional capability. The M16. If you got a logistics training goes with you, it's fine.
I guess that the AK must have John Moses Browning envy in the way it functions.
Well, the interesting, I actually met Kuryshnikov in St. Petersburg.
Oh, did you?
He's 82 years old, and still a feisty old general. I mean, you know, I went to their museum there, and he really put out a family of weapons you know, through the course of his time.
Yeah, as they used to say, Kalashnikov, we are the world.
Well, he did his part, that's for damn sure.
One of the scenarios you sent me in support, in some support literature off the air, talks about something that when I observed it myself firsthand last year, struck me as a tremendous terrorism target, and I'm specifically referring to Boston Harbor.
Yeah.
When you look at the layout of downtown Boston, the harbor goes right into it. On top of that, there's a liquefied petroleum terminal very close by. How likely is it that terrorists have figured that out, and what could be done to stop an attack that's in progress?
Well, it's an open press, and you can't stop it in progress. Most of our detection equipment says they're coming, there they are, they're here. Oh, God, there they go. There's no reaction force. In fact, the harbor police or the SWAT capability in Boston Harbor have two cigarette boats that were donated by a citizen there that probably did it as a tax write-off. I don't know that. But it's not a fighting platform.
No.
And if you don't train taking down vessels, you're not going to do it overnight.
Maybe they could send the USS Constitution on it, and Ranger Connor out there could figure out how not to sink it, and that'd be about the only thing they could do. We're just about out of time. Richard, if you'd like to give your website or any information on how people can get Vengeance or any of your other books, this would be a great time.
Well, yeah, Vengeance is out anywhere, of course, and dickmarcenko.com is my website, and there's a whole slew of people on that one that meet together, talk together, and we have an annual rally, and so it's got a full board makeup, and the PX will be open soon, so you can buy paraphernalia, maybe even the latest books.
Hey, even that. You know, one thing we didn't get a chance to talk about, and that's what I really like to, is that you work with a great American, Admiral Stocksdale, who recently passed away. He told you a lot of great things about ethics, didn't he?
He did, and you know, besides ethics, He worked even in the Pentagon with a pain threshold.
Okay.
And they have the gates to do it.
Yep. That's all the time we have. Dick Marcinko, it's been a pleasure having you on board. Let's not make this an isolated incident.
Sounds great. Thanks for sharing the airwaves.
My pleasure, sir. And thank you for your service.
You're welcome.
Want to encourage each and every one of you to be vigorous, not violent. Be vigilant, not vituperative. In Liberty, I'm Charles Heller.
Great God.
AM 690 KVOI, Tucson, your blowtorch of freedom.
With SRN News, I'm Andrew Stewart in Washington, breaking.